This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Hey, listen.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car-selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Listeners, friendly reminder that we now have a Patreon. If you like what you hear, you can support the pod. Each week we release video casts of the episodes, mini bonus episodes, reviews of clips submitted by subscribers, behind the scenes content, merch discounts, thirst traps, and more. Support our work for as low as $3 a month. Just go to patreon.com/girlsonporn. Welcome to Girls on Porn. I'm Laura.
I'm Rachel.
And we love porn.
This is our porn review podcast.
We talk about what we love and roast what we hate.
Helping you find hot, ethical, just plain better porn for your spank bank.
And we're looking at everything.
Before we introduce the topic, we have a swollen little segment for you today. Better get that checked out. 69 Seconds of Sex News.
We've pulled headlines from the news to keep you informed and horny. Here we go.
We probably already knew this one, but having sex that ends in an orgasm can help you fall asleep faster. A study that was recently published in the Journal of Sleep Research found that coming after sex helped participants fall asleep after an average of 16 minutes. This is compared with 17 minutes for those who had sex and didn't orgasm, and 20 minutes for those who didn't have sex at all. You know, less impressive stats than I was hoping for.
Ukrainian citizens are getting on OnlyFans to help pay their bills. Shooting pornographic footage means risking up to 5 years of jail time under Ukrainian law. But with unemployment up 34% and an inflation rate of 26% since the Russian invasion, many citizens are taking their chances and signups are surging across the country. One woman interviewed said that she's now earning $4,500 a month in a country where the median monthly income averages around $400.
There is also an international appetite for Ukrainian content. Poland saw an increase of 130%, and Spain hit a 600% increase for the search term Ukrainian porn. OnlyFans has generated $620,000 in taxes for Ukraine, with that number set to rise as more citizens sign up. Who knew that OnlyFans could be helpful in the war efforts?
Platonic erotic male bonding. Heard of it? The phrase refers to men lying next to each other, naked on the beach with their legs spread wide, allowing the sun to reach their genitals and buttholes. The founders call this practice intimate, but not sexual. They said that same-sex bonding through acts like butthole sunning is innate. It's natural and it's beyond gay or straight. It's a vitamin that we need. Taint life grand.
Taint it just.
You know.
Taint it black. You know?
Taint it black, you know. Burn it red.
Yeah, that classic Rolling Stones song.
Yeah, familiar with it?
Taint with numbers.
Finger tainting.
Say it taint so.
Say it ain't taint.
Say it taint so. Whoa, whoa. People love singing that song for karaoke.
They're just classics, you know?
Yeah.
We're all familiar. So this is a good kickoff for today's topic because I feel a little hysterical.
So do I, weirdly. I have no reason to, but...
No, it's good. I like this place. Especially when we're both
like
in
place.
It.
The taint is the place we're talking about. We like this place.
We come to this place.
We feel safe here.
Where's the AMC monologue about taints, huh? I'm going
to
write that.
Maybe
that. We come to this place.
For magic. We come to this place to get lost and also be found.
Oh, boy.
Wow.
Okay.
You'd think this was the weed app or something.
I feel good about it. I like, I say it before, I say it again. I like this place. I like when we're a little goofy, a little hysterical, a little high.
We're both on the verge of a summer vacation. So we're like giddy.
It's senioritis. We're ready to fucking go.
Yeah.
We're barely here, but we're here when we're doing it and we're doing great. frankly. Yes. So watch it. Hysterical literature.
So it's the topic.
It's the topic. We should get out in front of it, yeah, and explain that this is a sort of unusual episode because we're fully just this is just an advertisement for like a piece of art, essentially.
Yes, for Clayton Covet's art.
You're welcome, Clayton. Yeah. So Hysterical Literature was a series of videos that began in 2012.
Yes.
Where
on YouTube, of all places.
On YouTube, deliberately, which I love. Yes. Clayton was like, yeah, I can get around those community guidelines and still make something highly sexual that technically isn't porn.
Mm-hmm.
The premise for the concept, we'll set it up here and then we can talk about hysteria and then we can get back to the videos. Yeah.
Okay. Sure.
So the premise for Hysterical Literature is that it's a series of women reading books.
Yes.
And while they're reading those books, they're sitting at a table and under the table, they're being stimulated by a vibrator.
Yes.
And some of them come and some of them feel embarrassed or excited. But the idea is this sort of duality of them resisting the pleasure while trying to like continue reading, but then giving in to the pleasure.
They stop reading when either they're too distracted or fatigued.
Yes.
And then at that point, which is actually weirdly my favorite thing, is they restate their name and what they read.
Yes, that like they finish the video by being like, and my name is, and I was reading.
Yeah.
Yeah. So before we go into the actual videos and more details around that, we should probably talk about female hysteria, right? Because that's what this was inspired by.
Sure. Yeah.
So I don't know if I'm going to blow your mind, Rachel, but I wasn't aware until fairly recently. I don't know how recently, but you know, we all love that fact, or what we thought was a fact, that in the Victorian era, vibrators were used as a medical treatment for hysteria.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Turns out the theory may not hold water.
Oh.
Were you aware of this?
No, I wasn't aware of this.
So I found an article in The Atlantic from 2018 that references a study out of the Georgia Institute of Technology where two, like, sex researchers pretty, like, sufficiently demonstrate that there isn't really evidence of the medical Victorian orgasm. Like, the main theory around this was built on a book called The Technology of Orgasm from 1999.
Mm.
And basically, like, everyone got so excited about the idea that women would be, like, treated for hysteria with, or, like, there's such a, like, it's so crazy it could be true. Like, there's so much about it that tracks. Like, it's an insanely patriarchal time. Hysteria, which we'll get into, like, isn't really a medical issue.
No.
But if you're, like, a frustrated Victorian woman and your doctor gives you an orgasm, you'd be like, yeah, I feel better. Can I do that again?
Right.
So it, like, tracks. But there was largely, like, a medical rejection of electronics and, like, tech in medicine at the time. Like, medical organizations, like, didn't even, like, massage tools used for like physical therapy. And the theory in Technology of Orgasm is sort of loosely that like they didn't consider a female orgasm to be sexual or to even exist. Like it wasn't an orgasm. It was just, but there's just not sufficient proof of it, which is such a fucking bummer.
Yeah.
Because it was one of my favorite theories. But basically these two researchers wrote a paper being like, look, this is about a lack of peer review. Like everybody got so excited about this theory. The peer review, the like digging into the sources was really thin. And the author of the book, Technology of Orgasm, has since walked back the theory being like, oh, well, I just said maybe, but like the text is pretty clearly like, this is what happened, you know?
Yeah.
And kind of tried to backpedal. And just people largely have it like noticed, you know. Yeah. I think the like viral power of the theory was stronger than the viral power of the dispute, you know.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah.
Huh. Kind of a bummer.
Kind of a bummer.
I'm choosing to believe that they were using vibrators.
You're just choosing to believe?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm gonna choose to believe.
Okay. Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. I'm gonna choose to believe it. Because, like, think about all of, like, the great, like, movies and books and plays that were, like, inspired, you know?
Yeah, there's a Pulitzer finalist play that's come out of it. And, like, even that is kind of, like, worthwhile and, like, the themes that the play explores.
Yes, of course.
But I think both could be true. Like, something like a theory that doesn't hold water can still inspire some interesting conversations for sure.
Totally.
Yeah.
I am also just kind of like fascinated on like the idea of like what porn is, you know?
Oh, okay.
Like so Clayton Covert like specifically chose YouTube because it gets around, the idea of this gets around community guidelines because there isn't any explicit nudity.
Mm-hmm.
But watching this, like, it's
incredibly
really
intimate.
Yeah, it's intimate, and it's also like some of the most like real orgasms that I've ever seen.
Yeah,
you know, you can't really fake it.
Mm-hmm.
Also, what would the point be of faking this? You know,
yeah.
It's not for. I guess it goes back to the idea of what the intent is, right? Of,
yeah,
like, when you're making something.
Mm-hmm.
But does that take away, even if it's made without the intent to turn you on and you're still turned on by it, you know, like, does it mean it's not porn, you know?
Yeah.
Just an interesting little conundrum.
Yeah. I love that we're constantly talking about like what porn is. And I think we usually are like, yeah, it's a graphic depiction of a sex act, you know, like we're seeing the sex act. Mm-hmm. But like, this poses an important question that's like, okay, so nudity is required. We need to like see the jet because we're seeing the sex act, but we're not actually seeing the stimulus. You know,
right.
Like we're not seeing the vulva. So,
right, which is hotter to me. You know,
yeah,
is the intimacy in their real expressions,
mm-hmm.
And also that there is sometimes he's breaking down shame around female sexuality. He's sort of dealing with the body versus the mind.
Yeah.
You know, like how, mm-hmm, to focus on reading and ignore your body. And then when do you, at what point do you give in to it?
Yeah. I think what's really fascinating about it for me too is that this is female sexuality that, mm-hmm, manages to skirt objectifying the woman.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like that's so rare because, mm-hmm, it's not about her body as an object. She's reading, so she's like inherently more human. Do, mm-hmm, you know what I mean?
Yes.
Than if we were just watching her like get fucked. But it's, mm-hmm, so much about her sexual response,
yeah,
and her intimate like emotional response to this sex act that,
mm-hmm,
I think that's kind of, I mean, I'm hats off, honestly.
Yeah. There's also something about art and sexuality,
mm-hmm,
you know, that's at play here.
Yeah. Yeah. And he talks about, too, wanting it to, like, look high-end, to be, like, mm-hmm, austere and black and,
right,
white, like, no, yes, nudity.
Portrait,
which is,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. There's a little tidbit that says it explores feminism. This is the, like, art school bullshit explanation, yeah, of what it is, right? Like, we always, mm-hmm, got to get one of those when we're, like, at a gallery, what have you.
Right. Because someone's got to ask, what are you trying to do here? You know?
Yes. Yeah. And that's, like, half of what being an artist is.
Yeah.
I think it's just being, like,
that,
talk big about your work.
Yeah.
Is that it explores feminism, mind-body dualism,
mm-hmm,
distraction portraiture, and the contrast between culture and sexuality.
Yeah.
Which I think is great art school bullshit. Like, mm-hmm, mind-body dualism is interesting because I'm like, yep, that's just it. Like, we're trying to work against the thing that's, like, happening down below.
Mm-hmm.
Distraction portraiture feels like something made up. Like, we just made, yeah, that up. Like,
I
don't know that that's, like, a format anywhere but porn. We're, like, ignoring and, like,
ignoring.
Distraction,
yeah,
porn
distraction
is, like, its own genre.
Uh-huh.
But I love that. I love just, yeah, kind of, like, stamping some terms on it, you know?
There's also, like, if we were to think about it as porn, there's a lot of other things at play here that would make it be hot to the viewer,
mm-hmm,
you know? There is an element of forced orgasm.
Yeah.
There is an element of ignoring. There is an element of almost like stuck porn, like dubious consent a little bit.
Yes.
Like kind of like gray area,
mm-hmm,
which, you know, if we're going to argue about like if it's porn or not, or like what makes porn porn, I'm like, all of those things, all those elements are at play here. So I'm like, yeah, it is sexy to watch, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It is titillating.
Yeah. It's the resistance, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's anytime you're watching someone like try not to give in to something and then you see them enjoying it despite those very,
right,
valiant efforts, it's fucking hot. Yeah.
Tension. It's like, yeah, it reminds me of, you know, like when you're in acting school and everyone's like, oh, how do you play drunk or fucked up? It's like, well, you try to act sober, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Like you have to fight the drunk. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's that like contradiction of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's, I don't know. I find it fascinating. And I think it reminds me of, oh God, I can't remember what it's called now, but there's that one platform that's basically just like close-ups of people's faces when they're orgasming.
I don't know which one you're talking about, but
It's all like
right
shot
up our alley.
Aerially, like while they're like laying on a bed.
Yeah, this sounds familiar, but I can't.
God, I can't remember what it is now. It's horrible of me.
That's okay. You're generally the one who remembers names and everything. So if you miss one today, it's fine.
But it was probably like very much inspired by it. Also important to note, just because we talked about Andy Warhol recently in the Golden Age of Porn, like his blowjob video, which was a big inspiration.
Yeah.
For this.
Yeah. Clayton Cupid talks about that as being an inspiration. Mm-hmm. Yeah. See, I can get on board with Andy Warhol for his more scandalous, lesser known works. It's all the shit they put in museums that I'm like, I could give a shit. Yeah. Like, that's the stuff that he was making that was
the
actually
Campbell
making fun of.
Yeah.
This, yeah, like the pop art is actually a comment on the art world, whereas like everything else is far more compelling and subversive to me.
Yeah, like just a close up of a man's face while he receives a blowjob, you know? That's the kind of porn I'm trying to watch.
I know you are. I know this about
actually,
you.
I also want to say that I find it fascinating. The idea that, like, I don't know, there's this rhetoric or this idea out there that women sort of need some level of, like, emotionality in order to have an orgasm, or there needs to be some sort of, like, connection. And I feel like this really goes against it.
Yes.
Because I'm like, that's not true, actually. Like, I actually don't believe that that's true. Like, everyone always used to be, well, and I do believe it comes from men who like to be like, well, it's harder for a woman to come because they need to be really, like, mentally and emotionally connected. It's a lot harder for them. And that's why there's an orgasm gap. But it's like, no, actually, you just don't want to do the work that's involved.
There's a physiological challenge that if you're not up to task, you can like blame the fact that you're not intimately close to that person. But like, that's not it. You know,
no,
if you're intimately close to that person, you might learn how they come.
Exactly.
Yeah, that might be a result of like having an emotional connection with someone.
Right.
But that ain't it.
Yeah. Like there's so many men that love to be like, well, it just takes women a lot longer because they need to have like, you know, X, Y, and Z.
Yeah.
And I'm like, actually, no, that's not true. Because look, these minutes are like 6 minutes long and a lot of them get off.
Yeah.
Not even thinking about anything hot.
Yeah.
With no stimulus, no like emotional stimulus. I mean,
some
of them
do. With a camera on them and like a crew in the room.
Yes.
And literally, if anything, like trying not to come.
Right.
You know?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can we briefly talk a little bit more about quote unquote female hysteria? Because there's just some really interesting shit that goes all the way back.
Yes.
So one of the first references to it goes back way further than I would have thought. 1900 BC.
Yeah.
In ancient Egypt, the first descriptions of hysteria within the female body were found recorded on the Kayun papyri.
Mm.
Freud claimed that hysteria was not anything physical but an emotional internal condition that could affect both men and women. So that was actually like part of the revolutionary things that Freud had to say at the time. But he also was like, oh, it's caused by previous trauma that led to the, like, effect of being unable to, like, enjoy sex the normal way. And then it, like, gets into, the Oedipus complex.
Yeah, of course.
There were different approaches to healing it.
Mm.
In the 1850s, Silas Weir Mitchell used the rest cure, which sounds good initially. We're like, you just need to lay around a bunch. Like, that's great.
Yeah.
But it was a very strict avoidance of, like, all physical and intellectual activity. So it was, like, locking women away and being like, you can't fucking move. Like, that's gonna make you feel better. Like, like, hysteria to me is so obviously a symptom of the patriarchy, right? Like, it's a symptom of, like, being objectified and a form of property and having no agency over your own fucking life. Of course you're gonna lose your fucking mind. And they're like, you must be hysterical if you want to have autonomy, you know?
Right.
So that instead they like locked people up. And Mitchell's technique was the inspiration for Charlotte Perkins Gilman's The Yellow Wallpaper, which is a psychological horror story about the like deterioration of this woman's brain because she's like forced to be in isolation by her doctor.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Wow.
Which is kind of delightful.
It's just kind of wild that all this comes down to husbands being like, I don't know, my wife's being weird.
Yes. Yeah.
Know?
Yeah.
I don't know, she's being weird. She doesn't want to fuck me anymore.
Yes.
Something's wrong up with it, you know?
Yeah. There was also a theory that connects to hysteria where they called it the wandering womb. And this goes all the way back to ancient Greece.
Oh.
Basically the idea of being like, uh-oh, your womb, like the place where you carry your baby is like wandered around your body. Like it's been
wandered off.
It's like it's wandered off. Like it's just the weirdest.
I don't know. It's going to go see what your liver's doing.
Yeah. And then Edward Jordan in 1603, author of The Suffocation of the Mother, used hysteria as an explanation for like any mysterious medical issue that a woman might be facing. And he said that hysteria caused the wandering of the womb around the body and that it was a source of witchcraft, of course.
Naturally.
And this often like came up in like witchcraft trials, and he would be like an expert on the subject of the wandering womb.
Bring in the expert.
Bring in the expert.
He's like, yeah, actually, her womb has wandered off.
Yeah.
I have no evidence to support this, but I am an expert.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, the audacity. Should we do our fun little showdown twist?
Yes. Do you want to tee up the twist?
Yeah. So our lovely intern, Erica, shout out. She thought it would be fun to find different titles of commercial vibrators.
Over the years.
Over the years.
And we love this.
Yeah. Because some of them are really silly. Okay. First up, La Vida Electric Vibrator. Certainly inspired Livin' La Vida Loca.
It must know. Have. Must yeah. have. I'll start with...
She will wear you out.
Oh, lovely. Okay, I'm going to start with this.
Okay.
A short and sweet, simple one. Just the Vibra King.
Oh.
We named it King.
Of course. It couldn't be Queen.
My little vibrator daddy. You know, I've got to be straight even in my masturbation.
This inanimate object needs to have
a male identity.
Yeah, male pronouns. Okay. The Barker Vibrator.
Oh, the Barker.
Certainly just named getting after ahead the of inventor. The noise.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, must be. In my mind, I was like, it's loud, but they're embracing that.
Woof, woof.
Yeah.
It's so good that it'll make her bark, you know?
There you go. There's a way to...
I don't know, Doc. My wife's barking.
What can you do for her?
She won't fuck me and she's barking.
Next up here, I've got Stimulax. Sounds like a laxative, but what they're trying to do... I think this is why this is, we haven't heard of it today.
You're so stimulated, you'll finally be able to poop.
That's also important, you know?
Yeah.
That's important.
I don't know, Doc, my wife's backed up.
I like this character you have going of just the husband bringing his wife to the doctor. I don't know, Doc, she's barking. I don't know, Doc, my wife's backed up.
She can't poop.
I don't know, Doc, my wife won't come. She just won't do it.
She won't fuck me. She's not allowed to speak.
Of course not. Not in this scenario.
No.
Okay, what's next?
Vigors Horse Action Saddle.
Vigors Horse Action Saddle.
I like this. Wow. It sounds like it's going to be like the...
Early Sivian?
Early Sivian, yeah.
Yeah.
Did I ever tell you that when I worked at Queen of the Night, that I met this woman who was like a VIP patron, and we were like talking to her or whatever, and it turns out that she invented this thing called the Gnarly Rider, which was basically like a pool toy that like also vibrated when you sat on it.
And she was like, rich?
Yeah.
Amazing. I'm proud of this woman.
The Gnarly Rider.
The fact that I haven't heard of the Gnarly Rider, but she's still like made a killing.
Yes. First personal floating sexual stimulation device. A silicone saddle that retrofits to an aquatic elongated noodle type flotation device.
Wait, I might need this.
Oh my God.
Okay. Let's finish the showdown and then I'm going to buy this on the break. Legit. Okay. Next, I have... Electropathic belt.
Oh, a belt.
Which is, sounds like one of the ones that's kind of trying to pass itself off as something else. You know?
Yeah, 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 for sure.
They're like, we just want you to feel better.
Yeah. It's just a belt. That's it. last one from me. Dr. John Butler's electromassage machine or electric manipulator.
Oh, very nice. This is perfect because I also have two doctors. So we got Dr. John.
Oh, great. Perfect.
For me, we got Dr. Scott's electric flesh brush, which sounds as much like a torture device as it does a fun thing.
It sounds like something I would buy for my cellulite.
Yeah. Dr. Wilson's electric belt for ladies.
Oh.
Back to the belt. Yeah, we got to call it a belt.
Yes, to make everyone feel safe.
Everyone feel comfortable. Like, it's, listen, we're not going all the way down there. We're staying at the waist. Don't you worry.
It's just
worry.
A belt.
It's just a belt. All right, let's take a break.
Okay.
Welcome to Fail Better, David Duchovny's new podcast with Lemonada Media. On Fail Better, David, who has experienced both low and high-profile failures throughout his life, explores the vast world of failure, how it holds us back, propels us forward, and ultimately shapes our lives. Each week, he'll chat with guests like Ben Stiller, Bette Midler, and more about how our perceived failures have actually been our biggest catalysts for growth, revelation, and even healing. Through these conversations, he hopes listeners can learn how to embrace the opportunity of failure and fail better together. Fail Better is out now wherever you get your podcasts. Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress-them-on-the-third-date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Okay, so the first vid we're going to talk about is session number one, Hysterical Literature, which is Stoya,
yeah,
who's reading Necrophilia Variations by Supervert.
And to be clear, we're just going to touch on three of these.
Right.
Just to give you a little taste, we sort of like picked a diverse sampling of of these, but there's 12
available on YouTube.
And at the website hystericalliterature.com, like you can link right to them. And with that come like little essays and responses to the exercise, like from the women themselves too, which is great. So Stoya kicks us off.
Yes, she does.
It's the balmy summer of 2012. I don't know when it is. I mean, it's 2012, but I don't know if it's summer.
But this was the first one and it went viral.
Went like very, very viral quickly.
16 million views.
It has 28 million now.
Now, which is crazy because considering how it's like probably more than any other of her videos. So she reads Necrophilia Variations. And what's kind of fascinating about all of these is, and something that I love, again, going back to this idea that like women don't need all the bells and whistles to get off. Like, there's nothing really particularly sexual about any of the literature they're reading. You know what I mean? Like, they're not really reading, like, Anais Nin, you know?
Yeah, they're not reading, like, erotic passages necessarily.
No.
Like, some of them are kind, like, might be sensually charged. Like,
yeah,
you could look for it in necrophilia. But, like, it's, we're not, like, reading erotica. We're not reading porn.
No, we're not reading 50 Shades of Grey, you know?
Exactly. We're just reading literature,
you know?
Yeah.
And so this one is 6 minutes and 52 seconds. I was fascinated at how long they all were.
Mm.
And she's very focused. And around like 4 minutes in, we got like a really like hard exhale.
Yeah.
Because you kind of forget like when it starts.
Yeah. It's kind of great when it starts and you're like, oh, we're just reading. And you kind of get used to it. And then you're like startled. Like it's
and
the element
of
surprise.
It's usually like 4 or 5 minutes in all of these that like everyone's like.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh.
Yeah.
I know that. I'm familiar with that sound, you know.
And that feeling, yeah.
Yeah. So, and then she's kind of starts to, like, grip the table and, like, kind of shake a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
There's also something really fascinating that happens with her fingers.
Yes.
That I don't know if you watched. It's, like, almost like...
She's sort of, like, flexing that, like reaching and then coming, like, they all have really interesting fingers. Like, sometimes they'll, like, put it down on the table and grip. And I think Stoya's, like... Yeah, how would you articulate what she's doing?
She's sort of like, her fingers are sort of like reaching up and like, it's like almost like, it looks almost like balletic. Like it's like, you know what I mean?
They're both like reaching, but tense, but they're sort of somehow still elegant. Her fingers are articulated is like what we would call it in ballet, which like.
To me, it's like the equivalent of like a toe curling orgasm.
Yes.
It's like a finger curling, you know?
You can see the tension of the orgasm and the like pleasure in her fingers in a really cool way.
Yeah.
Stoya's also got a really gorgeous like giggly quality that like, I know that if it's fake, Rachel would be out the door, but it's not, it's definitely not. It's like very real and like warm and like the element of surprise is present in the way that she's laughing in response to her feelings. So it all just feels very natural and authentic and like irresistible, you know?
And there's also like an absence of shame.
Yeah.
That I really like.
Mm-hmm.
And she like laughs while she comes and she's like grinning, you know?
Yeah.
It's like pure
It's very pure. It's very, it's incredibly endearing. It's fucking hot. Like, I remember the first time I saw this. I don't remember where I was. I just remember being like, holy shit, what is this?
Right, right.
You know, just so striking.
Yeah, and then she, like, laughs, and she, like, tosses, like, her hair is, like, tousled, and she looks, like, flushed, and she's smiling, and she, you know, kind of, like, exhales and, like, says her name again on what she was reading. And I was like, this is sexy, you know? Yeah. Uh-huh. Like, there's just something about it that's so, like, pure, you know?
Yeah.
That I really dig.
Yeah.
I'm really into.
Yeah.
The session six with Soleil.
Mm-hmm.
She reads Beloved by Toni Morrison.
Mm-hmm.
And this one is 6 minutes and 12 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
And what I really loved about this one is that Soleil is trying so hard to stay focused.
Yes. The commitment to like the task is especially fierce from Soleil, I feel like.
Yes. Yeah. More so than Stoya did.
Yeah.
Really trying to like push through.
But it's almost like the fight makes it happen more intensely sooner. Yes. Did you get that sense? Yeah.
Yes. Because there was like, there was some tension. There was some, and there was like so much like concentration, like brow furrowed. And there was a moment where Soleil was like, I'm sorry. You know, like apologized, like got like really flustered. And there was like a little bit of like shame sprinkled in, I feel like, with that, that like kind of made it more exciting for me, or like more relatable, I think, for me.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting. Cause she also wrote a like beautiful little essay, like commenting on the experience and what that was like, and even ties it into Beloved and the literature. And what stood out to me is that she has a little postscript in her note about, like, that's to her parents.
Mm-hmm.
That's like, I hope that you're proud of me. Like, I hope that you see the merit in this, the like importance and the like revolution in this, and like hope the conservative church folk don't like seep into your psyche, and that you can just like love me and see this.
Right.
Thing that I was a part of, which I thought was really striking and almost ties into this sense that there's like a little hint of shame in the exercise that we could sort of see on her face and her body.
Right.
But it was very hot. Yeah. It seemed like she really gave into it ultimately.
There was also a moment where like she like almost was like ripping the book too.
Yes. Yeah. Like, it like gets like sort of almost like caught in her hands and just kind of becomes like an object of the exercise, you know?
And then she like afterwards like says her name, and she was like, oh my fucking God, that was the best thing of my life. And I was like, yeah. You know, like this is what we're looking for when we're looking for like the female orgasm.
Yeah. And I love that you get to see like how fun it was for her and like for all of them.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get Fett, who is reading in French, which was, I thought, like a lovely twist. Mm-hmm. We have subtitles, but just like hearing, I mean, we've talked more before on the show that we're like, just speak in another language. Like it's sex. It's like hot to like not know what you're saying.
Right. Fett reads The Loser by Thomas Bernhard.
Mm-hmm.
And this one's 12 minutes.
Yeah.
15 seconds, almost twice as long as the other ones.
Mm-hmm.
Which again, I really enjoyed because it was like, you forget when you start these, like what the point is, you know, like you're just like kind of listening to the story.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we get like the starting to breathe heavily and gripping the table, and like almost like there was a feeling like it was almost like she was like fighting it.
Yeah. She, you know? It's all this one, it was less like a head-on conflict and more like she was like, I'm gonna take a second and I'm gonna handle this and come back to the book, is almost how it felt. She like grabbed onto the chair and like the book is still open, and she's like holding the chair and the table, and it's like she's like, we're just gonna ride this out and then we're gonna return, and like that's kind of how it felt.
We'll be fine.
But then she just ended up just like luxuriating in the feeling and like just leaning into the chair and like staying in the experience. And then eventually she just closes the book. Like, fuck the book.
She like slams it shut and like literally like leans on the table. It was like,
just goes back to the thing. She was just like, I am switching tasks now, you know, which was kind of delightful that there was like a choice to be like, no, we're going all in on this now.
Yeah.
It was a fun journey. Yeah.
I loved that. And then she sort of like rides the wave of like an orgasm, you know? Like, I don't know if you've ever experienced this, but especially if it's like, I'm like edging, you know,
when
you you come and then you're like, am I going to come again?
Like, that's most of the way I like to do it.
Yeah.
Is to be a little greedy and to be like, I'm just going to keep, I'm just going to keep doing this if that's cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Or just with myself, obviously.
Yeah. And then afterwards, you know, she says her name. And I love that there's like still some like post that we get the camera still rolling. And she's like, I'm so sweaty. I'm so warm. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Oh my
God. She's wearing like a full sweater. Like they're all fully clothed. It's not like they're like any of them are more scantily clad particularly. No. But in that one, I was like, wow, yeah, that's a lot of clothing to be wearing while you come to think of it, you know?
Right. Like you'd be dripping in sweat. Yeah.
Yeah. It's incredible how similar they are, but how you can see these tiny little distinctions and how it's like really just fun to notice that. And the like dimension of it is like what gives you that authenticity and surprise and like the delight of it, you know?
Yeah, they were all both really hot and it was just like very genuine and pure. And I love that you said that you were saying like that you get greedy when you edge because there is sort of like a selfishness or like a greediness about like at the point that you like just fully give in, you know, in these videos and like let yourself go there. And that's when I'm like, oh, this is hot, you know?
Yeah. And I imagine if I was doing this, I'd be similar to Fett where like at some point I'd be like, fuck the book. Yeah. I'm not going to say my name when I'm reading. I'm going to let this happen for as long as I want it to happen.
Yeah.
And then eventually I'll end the video for us. But that there's a nice moment of control there where like you're presumably just going to have this vibrator on you and you can just enjoy that and like let it be your fucking moment however you want it to be. You know, like that was really delightful, I thought.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great stuff, honestly.
Love. Highly recommend. If you guys haven't checked it out, you should give it a watch for sure.
Yeah.
Gonna go read a book now, you know?
Yes. Yeah. Well, thanks so much for listening to Girls on Porn. You can find us on Instagram and TikTok at Girls on Pern. You can find us on YouTube, youtube.com/@Girls on Porn. You can find us on Twitter at GOP the Podcast, on our website, girlsonporn.com, on Patreon, patreon.com/Girls on Porn. And just for fun, I recorded recently a special little reading of some erotica just to be on theme for this subject. If y'all like it, we can keep it going. But little spicy bedtime story waiting for you on Patreon very soon if you happen to check us out.
Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to the pod if you haven't already. And hey, you know, we get a lot of sex negative comments on the podcast, and that sucks for us. So if you like the show, give us a little 5-star review and drop your Instagram handle and we'll tag you and thank you.
This has been Girls on Porn, the only GOP that can make girls come.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.